And we've got Dennis Stewart with us today. Good afternoon, Dennis.
How are you, my dear?
Great to see you. I'm good, thank you.
Oh, that's good.
Now,
that's good.
Dennis, it's been very, very cold lately. And so surely this is the time to discuss how some wintertime preventatives can, you know, help what's happening around with people getting sick and
how to resist wintertime ailments.
That's right.
Fascinating topic. I've got a few things to recommend, and I try to cover this topic at this time of the year, each year that I've done the program, just simple things that I believe can help us resist the challenge of cold weather, particularly those of us that are no longer teenagers. So I look forward to throwing out there a few ideas on resisting.
You've got a full list, haven't you?
I have indeed.
I'm going to go straight to the phones. Sonia from Katara, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Ever since I was about 45 or 50, I started getting bouts of apparently benign postural vertigo. Mm-hmm. It's called BPPV. Mm-hmm. And I've just had a really bad bout of it. It's lasted about 3 weeks. I've been doing the manoeuvres, the Epley manoeuvres and things like that. They don't seem to work.
Okay.
And I do have tinnitus.
Yes.
Or tinnitus.
Yeah, it frequently goes with it.
Yeah, and it's really been quite debilitating this last batch.
Okay, look, it's good that you've you know something about the history of it, and obviously you've had it medically looked at, and it's been shown to be a benign condition, which is very, very common, by the way. But look, there is potential help for this. And over the years, over the many years that I've been in complementary medicine, I've dealt with this problem by recommending two herbs that come from two different traditions. One of the herbs is one that's not well known, which is unfortunate. Or, well, to an extent it is a fortunate thing, because vertigo is something that does need to be medically assessed and understood, and I'd hate to see remedies being thrown about by unqualified people for addressing a condition that may not have been investigated. But the first herb is a herb that's known as wood betony, B-E-T-O-N-Y. Now, wood betony is the herb that's referred to in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia, which since 1983 has been virtually the Bible of modern herbal medicine. People have probably heard me mention that text on this program. A wonderful text. I wish that it would be more appreciated both by the medical profession and also by the complementary medical people as well. But wood betony is the recommendation in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia for addressing this problem. Now, the point about it is that it is extremely safe. The worst thing that could happen is that you may not get the benefit that it has potentially shown it can do. It's called up, and therefore it must have a reasonable reputation, and I believe it is one of the most important remedies for this condition. So a use of wood betony, which would probably have to be procured from a herbal medicine practice, a compounding pharmacy. It's not something that is normally stocked in a retail outlet, but not difficult to get for practitioners. Now, it would usually come, therefore, in a liquid form, and if we were to prescribe it or others were to prescribe it, it would have to be prescribed in the dosage stipulated for it in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia. Now, the thing also is, because it is a very gentle remedy, it's not likely to assert itself in a short period of time. You've had this condition for quite some time, so you cannot expect an immediate resolution of it. And that is the case with many herbs, not all, but many herbs.
First
recommendation, wood betony, taken in the stipulated pharmacopoeial dose for a couple of months at least before you make an assessment as to whether or not there's sufficient benefit to warrant it being persevered with. Now, the second herb is a more recent introduction to professional herbal medicine, and that is the modern preparation developed by Germany after the Second World War, based on the herb Ginkgo biloba.
Yes.
G-I-N-K-G-O. a very popular remedy, but unfortunately, again, not well represented, because people don't understand that even though it has a reputation for things like tinnitus and vertigo, the two requirements associated with making it work is, number one, to get a preparation that is concentrated enough with the chemistry of the herb to make it work, and secondly, dosed accordingly to the literature to make it work. And thirdly, if you were to look at ginkgo biloba, most indications for it require a period of time, sometimes quite an extensive period of time, to allow it to kick in. Yeah. I see ginkgo still as being one of the most exciting innovations to modern herbal medicine, and had the, again, come back to the point that I gave the first lectures on ginkgo in a Black Boys auditorium at Balgala at the very early stage of my career. Mm. So I know a bit about it. I would recommend a trial on both those remedies. As far as I'm aware, there will be no interaction between the two of them. They work quite differently. If you have other medications you're taking, you should ensure, either by your own investigation on Google or through a pharmacist, that they would not clash with these two. It's unlikely that they would clash with wood betony. There's always a possibility of clashing with ginkgo, particularly if you're on medication of a blood-thinning nature or other cardiovascular conditions. But I'd be confident, Sonia, about this, not just based on the literature, but based on my prescribing it over my 50-year practice career. I think that's worthwhile giving a go.
I think I will give it a go, and I will probably come to your rooms in New Lantern.
Okay, wherever. Thank you, Sonia. That's been a good discussion.
Thank you very much. Okay. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thank you, thanks, Sonia. Let us know how you go. And we're joined on the line by Glenn from Warners Bay. Hi, Glenn. How can we help you?
I just want to see, apparently I've been diagnosed with an overactive thyroid.
Yes.
And I've been on some medication, but it seems to make me nauseous. So I'm just wondering if there's anything else available out there that I could take just to keep my thyroid under control. It's just on the limit of the upper level.
Just on the limit. It's not overactive in any significant or dangerous level or high level.
No.
It's just on the borderline.
It's been like this for, say, 10 years when they picked it up through blood tests.
Okay.
And we're just monitoring. I got sent for Graves' disease, that's okay.
Yes.
And then, I moved suburbs, I changed doctors, and then same thing, you know, got referred to a specialist and then ended up on medication and had scans and ultrasounds and everything's okay. And the medication's brought back within the range, but it's sort of making me nauseous at times. And so I'm just wondering if there's something out there.
Glenn, I'm a bit of a supporter of the modern medication that's used for hyperthyroid conditions, and I'm a bit concerned that you're reacting that way, because it is, generally speaking, quite a successful medication. I've not noticed too many people have what you might call nasty reactions. I would think the first thing to do would be to discuss this reaction that's occurring with your doctor to find out if there's any reason why this should be so, because I've not met too many people in my history of complementary medicine that have reacted this way to the medication that I think I know that you're taking. So first up, are you on other medication, Glenn, as well?
Only Crestor.
Okay. Yeah, Crestor.
I've been on that for a while.
Yeah, now Crestor is a good medication for your cholesterol condition. Discuss it with your doctor. Having said that, in herbal medicine, whilst it's not a condition that we treat very frequently because the modern approach has proven so successful, the medication that's called up in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia is known as Lycopis virginica. Now, that is its botanical name, and it's best known by its botanical name, Lycopus, L-Y-C-O-P-U-S, Lycopus virginica. Now, it's one of those things that should not be taken without medical approval or medical monitoring because it is quite active. So yeah. I'm not suggesting you do that. I'm saying that there is a herb that has been used prior to, I suspect, the advent of more modern medications. I think your first step is to discuss your reaction with your GP. There has to be some reason for this. Check that out. Only with medical monitoring should you consider the usage of that remedy that I've mentioned.
Okay, then.
What about ginger for nausea?
Oh, ginger, well, for nausea, but that's a little bit different to what you get with an overactive condition.
But, yeah, if he's just feeling nauseous, nausea?
He's got, with any nauseous condition, that there has to be a reason behind it. And if it is medication-based, with that particular condition, I know the drug he's talking about, I come back to the point that I've not seen too much of that. His doctor or an endocrinologist may well have seen a lot more than this, and that's why I'm suggesting Glenn, you don't jump too quickly to go to alternatives. You see first whether you can become more tolerant to what you're prescribing.
As soon as I have the medication, it's within minutes that feel sick or am actually sick.
Yes. Okay. Well, that needs to be looked at because there may well be other medication or treatments in the mainstream because it is such a condition that is responsive and I believe pretty harmlessly to modern medical techniques. I push you in the direction of getting this clarified by your good GP or an endocrinologist.
Okay, then.
Good luck, Glenn.
Thanks, Glenn.
We've got Danny from Arcadia Vale on the line. Thanks for holding, Danny. What can we do to help you?
Thank you. Hello. Hello, Dennis.
Hello,
how
Danny.
Are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm on a weight loss journey and I've been on injections.
Yes.
And
I'm worried about it.
Yeah, well, I looked into it and I don't want to be on them longer term. I've only been on them for a month.
Yes.
And I'm now on my second month. And after that, I think I want to stop them. And I'm looking for a herbal appetite suppressant or a herbal something or other that I could use instead of the injections because I don't want to be on them much longer than 2 months.
Have you lost weight on the injections?
I have lost 7 kilos.
Okay.
Already.
With your medical management of it, what are your doctor's sentiments about how your progress is and the desirability of staying on it longer or getting off it quickly?
Well, they don't want me to stay on it any longer than necessary.
Okay.
My menopause doctor said suggested just 2 months to kickstart the weight loss and then continue it on myself, through diet and exercise, which I can do, but I was just wanting, the thing with the injections is I just don't feel hungry. Not only that, they're making me nauseous as well.
Yes.
So I'm just wanting to find maybe a herbal remedy that is an appetite suppressant.
Look, to be frank, there is no competitor with what you're presently using.
Right.
And I understand your reservations about using the medication.
Yes.
But what I can say is this, that if you've made that sort of progress, you've come off the launching pad, which is good.
Yes.
And the techniques that I've found useful and that cost you nothing is now that you've reached this point, look at a program, an eating program, that is structured around the concept of the 5-2 diet.
Right.
That was developed very successfully by the well-known British radio and television commentator who unfortunately died accidentally a number of years ago. But the 5-2 diet is well documented and is a procedure that I have used myself and I know it works and many of my patients have seen it work by using the technique, which is quite simple. It's essentially 2 days of the week one reduces one's intake of food quite dramatically. I recommend to patients at least by 2/3. And right, the the two-thirds reduction in your diet should leave, the two-thirds that you're working with, or the amount that you have to reduce your eating to, they should be essentially proteinous foods, right, with a massive reduction on those days of carbohydrates. And you know what carbohydrates are. You can never completely cease using carbohydrates because they're in so many foods. But the concentrated carbohydrates, the pastas, the potatoes, direct sugar, too much fruit, which is riddled with fruit sugars, and of course fruit juices are something also that would come into that category. Two-thirds of the food you eat should be based on that principle of restricting dramatically the intake of carbs, and it's not difficult. And if you do that twice a week, and perhaps do it a little bit more viciously as far as what you can reduce, even to the point on those 2 days of almost semi-fasting, that has the potential, in my opinion, to speed up the process that you've already started and lessen the easy putting on of the weight that you've lost. Follow it up. I know it sounds rather simple, but it is simple, but it does require somewhat of discipline. But where I have had my clients, and I get many of them coming with this problem, who have used the technique and read the literature on it and persevered with it, there's usually some reduction sufficient to warrant their pursuing it. In response to, is there anything that would help? There is a herb that is frequently used, particularly in some levels of type 2 diabetes, to help the dietary program, and that is an Indian herb that's known as Gymnema, G-Y-M-N-E-M-A, Gymnema sylvestris. Now, you can Google it, and you would find something of its Indian tradition. It's very strong in Ayurvedic medicine as a leading remedy to lessen, if you like, appetite, not curtail it. I don't want it to be seen as an appetite suppressant, but it is used in dietary programs to assist the discipline of the diet.
Okay, all right. Yes, I'll look into that. Thank you very much.
Give it a go.
I think 5-2, those 2 days that you fast, do they need to be consecutive?
No. I found in my situation a Tuesday and a Thursday.
That's very doable.
Yes, that is. And look, I'd like you to get back to me because it would give confidence to other listeners to see that one can, by getting to the literature, seeing the credibility, the medical credibility of it, coming from what I would consider a man who was a genius as far as his innovative health ideas were concerned, a great tragedy that he accidentally died, get back and let us know, because people, in my opinion, spend too much money on procedures and programs that will initially do something, but at the end, perhaps, don't achieve too much.
Yes, it's a very expensive exercise as well, and that's another factor, you know, as well. But
I think you've done. Look, I don't know you well enough to comment otherwise, but I think you've done well to take the initiative and realise that you needed to move in that direction. And your good doctors have started you on a program which has given you some benefit. The conservative attitude you have towards the treatment is good also, and the knowledge now that there are other techniques that can be used that are inexpensive, have credibility behind it, will encourage you to pursue the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And next on the line we have Gary from Rutherford. Thanks for holding, Gary. What can we do to help?
Good afternoon, all, and good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Gary. Thank
you. I often listen to your show, and it's very good. I like to hear it every day.
Thank you.
Now, I heard you talking about ginkgo biloba.
Yes.
And woodberry, but...
Wood betony, yes.
Yeah, wood betony, but in the ginkgo biloba, there's doses of 2,000, 6,000 and 12,000 units.
Okay.
Which one should you be taking?
Okay. What my response to that would be that... The dose range for ginkgo is, in my opinion, dependent upon the condition for which you're using ginkgo. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you're taking it, as I would recommend it be taken, particularly by those of us that are no longer teenagers, I would suggest, in order to see it as something that would help resist cognitive decline, that one takes it at a tonic level ongoingly at the lowest dose.
The lowest dose?
At the lowest dose, because taken as an agent, as a tonic remedy, not for any particular condition, but rather to as a general health measure, and at our stage in life, I see ginkgo being useful to resist some of the things that begin to assert themselves as we get older. I'll use that conservative terminology. So,
oh yes, well, I am older.
You're probably competing with me, but I won't go there. But a low dose preparation, persevered right. with ongoingly, I believe, based on my reading and my lecturing on it and my understanding of its chemistry, if there's no actual condition for which it's being used, then the lowest dose, I think, is appropriate and carried out regularly.
Yeah, I've got tinnitus and a bit of balance.
Okay. What I would say there is both of those conditions are not going to be resolved quickly. So, yeah. Again, I would recommend that if you're going to use the ginkgo towards the lowest dosage and persevered with over the extended period of time that I'm talking about. Yeah. Now, let me just put this in perspective. The ginkgo is used for many conditions. One condition that it is quite successful is a condition known as intermittent claudication, which basically is very poor circulation to the peripheries, so significant that it causes people to have painful walking. Ginkgo, by virtue of its ability to stimulate and encourage what's called collateral circulation, is a remedy that is popularly used in Europe, where the herb is used medically a lot more than what it is in Australia. There, one would tend to work with the remedy and pushing it a little bit higher, because there you're addressing a particular medically defined condition that would require, in my opinion, a dosage moving upwards in order to address the condition, whereas yours is a subtle condition that requires perseverance and the ginkgo taken in low dose over a long time.
Okay. Now, I also suffer with neuropathy.
Yes. Now, are you diabetic?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, type 2 diabetic. Now, the reason I mentioned that, and again, this can be validated in the literature, you can Google it, but the reason I ask that is that neuropathy associated with diabetes is called up as being potentially helped by going on to higher doses of oil of evening primrose. It comes as an encapsulated preparation in various dosages. And go to the literature and find, for those sceptics, that it is called up for that form of diabetes, the peripheral neuropathy. Yep. There's no guarantee, but again, it is an excellent, inexpensive supplement that has value also in resisting some of the things that we get as we get older, things like aches and pains, arthritic conditions, similar to the fish oil in that way. But oil of evening primrose in an encapsulated form to address that problem with an expectation that it is likely to take time, and if at all, it's not a guarantee, but the literature suggests that in diabetes associated with, or a neuropathy associated with diabetes and only diabetes, there's some evidence to say that it's worthwhile giving a go.
Got a Marianne from Nelson Bay on the line. Thanks for holding, Marianne. How can we help you?
I just wanted to say about that lady who had the vertigo issue. I had it for many years, and I had a bit of a stressful job. And once I got rid of that job, the vertigo never came back.
Yeah.
And it's been at least 5-6 years now. So that was good. But I did use a ginkgo. Someone told me to use a double dose, morning and night, and I did, and it worked beautifully.
Yeah.
So definitely love it.
Thank you for
it.
That. That's good feedback, yeah. Marianne. And yeah. You used it sensibly. That was good.
Yes, yeah. But I do have a little bit of psoriasis.
Yes.
And the doctors want to give you steroid creams and things, which I don't like to use. I was just wondering, do you have any idea?
Okay. Is it on your typical places, the knees and the elbows?
No, this time it's on my inner top of my arm.
Okay.
I do get it on my hair, but I use oils and rosemary mixed together to get rid of that.
Do you use tea gel on your scalp?
No, I don't like the smell of it. So I just use a blend of oils and rosemary oil.
Okay, fair enough. Well, rosemary is particularly useful for scalp conditions of a scaly nature. But yes. You've got it only on a limited area. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just one spot's popped up and I went to the doctors and they said, oh, I've got some psoriasis there. And I do get dry skin over winter.
Yeah.
So I've been putting oil on every day now.
Okay.
But this is just a little bright red round spot about the size of your small fingernail.
What I would comment and say is, look, it's in my opinion, it's not worthwhile you're going in for anything expensive naturopathically because it's a fairly limited lesion that you've got and it may not get any better. What I'd suggest you do, and I'll forward you a jar of it free of charge because you've taken the trouble to talk to me about it. I have a cream called the GA Complex Cream. And now let me explain that to you. GA stands for glycyrrhetinic acid, and that is the extract from the herb licorice. Licorice was long shown topically to have an action similar to cortisone, and that activity of licorice was shown to be related primarily to one of its constituents known as glycyrrhizin or glycyrrhetinic acid. It was popularly or reasonably popularly used in England by some dermatologists, but ceased to be popular with the advent of steroids. Now, I have used the GA cream, as I've called it, primarily on eczema and dermatitis, basically all of my career, with very good results in many cases. The GA complex is based on glycyrrhetinic acid, but it also contains what's called oil of cade, which is an oil extracted from a herb. And that cade oil works very similar to coal tar or pine tar. And that, in the context of glycyrrhetinic acid, has shown some benefit in limited areas of psoriasis. So that's why I'm happy, if you're interested, forwarding a jar to you, seeing it's such a limited area. For the overall dryness, I have a dry skin condition, so I know a little bit about what you experience with dry skin, always worse in wintertime, get onto some oil of evening primrose in high dose and stay on it for a while. About 6,000 milligrams daily. It's cheap, as you know. You get it in encapsulated form. I still argue that it's still one of the best topical or one of the best oral agents to take for dry skin and dry skin conditions.
Okay. And you can take that if you're on non-cholesterol medication?
I beg your pardon?
It's okay to take that if you're on cholesterol medication?
It shouldn't clash with a statin. Yeah. I'm not aware of it. And now, look, before you'll need to contact the switchboard and give them your details so that I can send you, free of charge from my program, a jar of this to try you.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Marianne.
Thanks, Marianne. Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Talk about your ailment list for cold and flus.
It's a very interesting topic, and indeed we'll take it up more fully next week. But wintertime, for some people, can be quite a challenging period of time, particularly for those of us that are no longer teenagers. You notice how I couched that?
Yes,
those
I do.
Those of us that are teenagers. In some parts of the world, of course, wintertime can be a deadly experience. But in places like the UK now, where for many people even keeping warm now is so wretchedly costly. So what we're going to do is look at how we can get a better edge to coping with wintertime problems by looking at the topic from these perspectives. First of all, to look at some lifestyle modifications that can be sensibly taken and cost us nothing in order to build up, in my opinion, a better prospect of resisting the coldness that cold does to our bodies. Cold is a pathogen. So I've looked at some lifestyle factors which we'll take up. Then I'll look at a select range of supplements, easy to obtain, very economical, with a proven track record, as evidenced by many, many people over many, many years. A simple range of supplements, vitamin supplements, that, in my opinion, can be accessed economically and taken sensibly to give you an edge on coping with winter much better. And then I want to look at two of the most important herbs that I consider to have at hand to be taken or utilised during the cold weather, during the winter weather, particularly for people that experience pretty serious cold or flu symptoms during wintertime. And let me just say, what we're talking about here does not clash with any techniques that our good doctors might want to offer, such as the flu injection, etc. This could be seen as augmenting the medical approach. And then what I want to look at also, and after the two main remedies that I'll talk about, both of which I've probably mentioned before, but we'll go over it again and emphasise the significance of them, I'll then go over that famous cough syrup that I've mentioned on this program for years and years and years, a simple preparation based on the onion, which can compete, in my opinion, I've got to say this, haven't I, which can compete with a lot of the stuff that's found in our counters, in our retail counters, pharmacies, health food stores and supermarkets. Not that I put them down, but this preparation has proven so useful, not only on my own four kids during their growing up period, but on listeners for many years. It'll be a good program next week when we look at cold weather hints, clues and information.
It's always a good program with you, Dennis.
Thank you.
We will chat to you next week. Look forward to it.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.